From WVUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The battle over White House judicial nominees reached near-biblical proportions yesterday as conservative evangelical leaders gathered to proclaim their faith under attack. The event, broadcast across the country, was dubbed Justice Sunday, Stop the Filibuster Against People of Faith. And speakers like Reverend Al Mohler, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, left no doubt about what they saw at stake.
Religious liberty is on the line here because the courts also hold, by their constitutional role, a responsibility to defend our religious liberty. But in far too many cases, judges have constrained and violated our religious liberty. And so now are some members of the United States Senate.
And when the giant screen at Louisville's Highland Baptist Church lit up most prominently, it was not with a preacher, but with Republican Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist joining the fray.
Either confirm the nominees or reject them, but don't leave them hanging. Don't leave our courts hanging. Don't leave our country hanging.
Dr. Frist is not known for his religious zealotry, but he is known to be zealously interested in a 2008 bid for the presidency. Yesterday, he punched his ticket with the religious right. Conservative evangelical leaders say that's just the beginning of what they expect from the GOP. Critics charge Frist with fanning religious war and encouraging a Republican theocracy. Tonight on Point, Justice Sunday, Bill Frist's gamble, and the church-state line in American democracy. How do you see it? What is the significance of Bill Frist on that giant screen in the evangelical church in Louisville? Is this a misuse of religion, or just a hard Democratic push by conservative evangelicals? Is this a winning strategy for the GOP, or a bridge too far? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Peter Walston, White House correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He's author of the forthcoming book, One Party Country, the Republican Party's Plan for Dominance in a New Century. He attended the Justice Sunday event in Louisville, Kentucky. Peter Walston, thanks for being with us tonight.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Hello, Jack. Good to have you.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Mr. Walston.
So, Peter Walston, you were there in the church. We understand there were some 2,000 folks packed in. Give us a sense of what it was like last night.
Well, it was, I hate to overuse the word surreal, but as people often do, but, you know, we were sitting in a church on a Sunday, and...
That sounds pretty ordinary.
Pretty ordinary, except the backdrop up there on the pulpit or on the stage were the five portraits of judges, four-foot-tall portraits of judges who have been blocked by the Democrats in the Senate. And up on the big screen, as your intro pointed out, was Senator Frist, but not just Senator Frist, but a constant stream of phone numbers for senators, most of them Democrats, but also some, as Dr. James Dobson put it, squishy Republicans.
These were not, then, big, huge images of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, but of very political figures.
That's correct, although intermixed frequently in the dialogue, certainly they would pray and they would talk about the importance of prayer, and there were references to the Bible. And several occasions the congregation was asked to folks were asked to bow their heads and pray for the future of the country and pray for the future of the courts.
Now, the tone of the buildup to this was defensive and angry, saying that the implication on the Dr. Dobson's website and others, that the evangelicals were under attack, that there were forces who were against faith in the country who were kind of out to get them, or at least out to stymie their interests. Was that the tenor of the speeches and remarks again last night, Peter?
Yes, it was, very much so. And, you know, there's a sense in the evangelical community that really for years now, they've had a backseat to public affairs and political decision making in the country, both in government and also in both parties, and certainly in the courts. And Dr. Dobson talked about a 43-year history of assault on religious liberty by the Supreme Court and by the federal courts. He says dating back to decisions in the 1960s about the Bible reading in schools and school prayer, and running up through Roe v. Wade, of course, and recent decisions on sodomy laws. And of course, they talk about the Ninth Circuit ruling on the Pledge of Allegiance. So in their mind, you know, they've been beaten and battered for decades, and now with the 2004 elections, they feel this is their time. They took a lot of credit for reelecting President Bush and for expanding the majority in the Senate and in the House for Republicans, and they feel like it's their time and their due.
Let's hear just a little bit of Dr. James Dobson, one of the founders of Focus on the Family, addressing the Justice Sunday rally yesterday, talking about the top judges in America, including the Supreme Court.
They're unelected and unaccountable and arrogant and imperious and determined to redesign the culture according to their own biases and values, and they're out of control.
And aligned with those who are against faith and out of control, into this environment came a pre-recorded, videotaped message from the Republican Majority Leader, Senator Bill Frist of Tennessee. And give us a sense of the essence of that message, Peter Walston.
Well, Senator Frist's message, if you were to see it in a vacuum, you might think it was pretty moderate. He did not talk about religion. He didn't talk about faith. He didn't talk about a culture war or a religious war or an assault on religious liberties. And in fact, he talked about how he doesn't feel that that there should be retaliation against judges who make decisions that he disagrees with. And of course, that was a reference to Majority Leader Tom DeLay, who, after the Terri Schiavo case in Florida, talked about how those responsible for her death would eventually be held responsible. And then also comments during a recent private meeting where Dr. Dobson and other evangelical leaders talked about ways to punish sitting judges by maybe having Congress defund the courts. You know, Senator Frist was careful to distance himself from that. But at the same time, you know, there he was. His image was in the church. The video was made specifically for this gathering, and it was a gathering in which the overriding theme was declaring this assault on religious liberty. So on the one hand, he was, if you would have seen the speech in a vacuum, it might have seemed perfectly moderate and appropriate. But on the other hand, here he was delivering it in this context.
Peter Walston, you're there very often in Washington analyzing what's going on. Give us a political analysis of why Bill Frist was there up on that big screen at this evangelical meeting last night. Why? What's the political calculus here?
Well, evangelicals are increasingly an important part of the Republican Party base. There was a time not too long ago that even the evangelical vote was split. But the Republican Party, starting largely with George W. Bush in 2000 and even more intensely after his election, after he took office in 2001, the party has really courted evangelicals and made them a part of the base. And they mobilized millions of voters in key battleground states, and really did help secure the president's reelection and, like I said, extend that majority in Congress. So
Bill Frist wants the White House. If he wants the Republican nomination and a chance at victory, is his calculation that he had to be there, that he had no choice?
Yes. I mean, if he wants to win the Republican nomination, you know, the Republican nominations are decided by conservative voters, and this is the core of the conservative movement. So, yes, he probably felt that he had to be there. But what's interesting now is another very important part of the Republican base, which is the business community, the United States Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, the corporate world, which has also been heavily courted by the Republican Party for donations, is not pleased with this strategy. And while they're not actively opposing what Senator Frist wants to do, which is to change the Senate rules so Democrats can't block these judges, the business groups are telling Senator Frist that they won't support it either, which is has also got to factor into his calculation. He can't win a Republican nomination without evangelical and conservative votes. But he also can't win it without contributions from corporate leaders.
Can't pay for it without them. So is there a serious rift in the GOP brewing here, or is this a manageable tension?
Right now, it appears to be a manageable tension. But, yes, there is a serious rift in the GOP, right? The potential for a serious rift, because you have to consider the context that at the same time that this evangelical movement has gained such prominence and so much fervor, The leading candidates for the Republican nomination in 2008 are not in the from the conservative wing.
Including Bill Frist?
Well, Senator Frist appears to be trying to become part of the conservative wing. The question is whether he'll be taken seriously. So,
and doing it by reaching across there last night. Jack Beatty, there's the tension inside the GOP's tent. Outside, all kinds of lamentations about what went on yesterday.
Yes, but let me just stay inside just for a minute. George Bush dealt with the leaders of these groups at one remove. Karl Rove talked to them. There was a reason for that. He didn't want to plight his troth to the likes of James Dobson and Mr. Mueller, who looks to be an anti-Catholic bigot. And what Bill Frist has done here is he's exposed himself to the jujitsu maneuver in politics. That's when you use a guy's strength against him. You turn it into a weakness. It happened in 1984 when Walter Mondale got the endorsement of the AFL-CIO. Gary Hart tagged him with a representing the special interest. Mondale got through the primaries. That charge helped to kill him in the general election.
What makes you
someone's
so sure gonna, this isn't a winner?
Someone's going to ask this guy somewhere along the line, do you repudiate Reverend, or if he is a Reverend, Mueller, who's made these statements that the papacy is an unbiblical, a false office? Do you repudiate that statement or not? If he says, oh, I do repudiate that, he alienates some of this leadership. If he doesn't, well, he's going to lose some Catholic votes. It's a tough position.
We're going to hear from people on both sides, more than two sides of this issue tonight. We're talking about God, politics, and the GOP. Peter Walston, Jack Beatty, please stick with us. Listeners, you can join us. What is the significance of Bill Frist talking on that giant screen in Louisville last night? 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about God, politics, and the GOP, about Justice Sunday, Bill Frist's gamble there yesterday, and the church-state line in American democracy. You can join the conversation tonight. What do you think? Was the Senate Majority Leader right to join with sponsors who called Democrats and the judiciary, at least parts of it, against people of faith? Is this a misuse of religion, or is it just a hard Democratic push by conservative evangelicals? Is it just American politics? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's get a sense of the tenor last night. Here was Family Research Council President Tony Perkins, the MC of Justice Sunday in Louisville.
We have a very important place in this debate, and we need to let our voice be heard, because the outcome of this debate will shape the future of this nation.
Shaping the future of the nation. We're joined tonight by Peter Walston. He's White House correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He was there at the Highland Baptist Mega Church in Louisville last night. Our own Jack Beatty is with us. And joining us now from Falls Church, Virginia, is Richard Lessner, executive director of the American Conservative Union. He served as senior political advisor to Gary Bauer's 2000 presidential campaign. He's a senior writer for the Family Research Council. Richard Lessner, thank you for joining us tonight.
Oh, good evening. How are you?
Very well, thanks. And with us tonight from Washington, Rabbi David Saperstein, director of the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism. Rabbi Saperstein, thank you for being with us tonight.
Delight to be with you.
Richard Lessner, first to you, if I may. Interpret the call that was going out from Louisville last night. What are the expectations there and around the country of the Republican Party?
Well, sure. Let me first say that I'm no longer associated with Family Research Council. I was formerly. I'm now executive director of the American Conservative Union.
Got it. Thank you.
We work very closely with FRC and are happy to do so. I think that the very fact that we're talking about the legitimacy of this is evidence of what conservative Christians in America are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that millions of evangelical and conservative Christians, conservative Catholics, conservative Jews, conservative evangelicals, wish to participate in the political process to preserve or advance principles and values that they find important, that the very fact that that's questioned demonstrates how we are moving in America into a post-Christian era, that it is somehow illegitimate for conservative Christians to participate in the political process, but it's perfectly legitimate for those who have a more liberal interpretation of their faith to participate. So I think that the very fact we're having this discussion and that so many on the left are in such a swivet over the prospect of church-going people actually wanting to participate in the political process, such a horrifying and terrifying prospect, I think this in itself is evidence of of why evangelicals feel that the country is slipping away from its historic roots and Judeo-Christian principles.
Certainly a strong language from the left, you're right. Evangelical Jim Wallace, a left-leaning evangelical, said this amounted to a declaration of religious war, an attempt to hijack religion bordering on idolatry. But it's not just liberals or the left. Richard Lesner, I see Lindsey Graham here, Senator of South Carolina, saying on Fox News yesterday, warning not to go down the road of saying that Democratic senators are not people of faith or questioning their religion, saying that they're religious bigots, saying let's not go down.
I don't know that anyone has done that, and I think that it is a caricature and a slander to suggest that that was what anybody was saying. Look, people of faith have different political philosophies, but what we're saying is that if you have a conservative approach, that you are somehow beyond the pale, that you are to be excluded from the system, and you're not to be allowed to participate. I mean, we've had all kinds of religious folk on the left participate in the political life of our country, and that's fine. They're welcome to do that, whether it's pastors like Jesse Jackson or others who are out there promoting same-sex marriage or a great deal of tolerance for abortion in our society. The left is perfectly able to do that. I don't think anybody's questioning anyone's religious motives, but you have a large body of Americans who are very conservative. They voted for George W. Bush. And they feel like the fruits of electoral victory are the prerogative to name members of the federal bench. The president's being denied that. And let me set the record straight. The Republicans are not changing the rules. There is no rule in the Senate that allows for filibustering of judicial nominees. It has never in 214 years of Senate history been the practice to allow a filibuster for presidential nominees. That has never been the practice.
Well, we've seen those presidents interpreted in a number of ways, but I take your point. And you're saying, let's go. Let's cut it down to the majority. Vote this crew in because we voted the president in.
Well, exactly. That's what the constitutional system envisions, that the president appoints with the advice and consent of the Senate. Mm. At this point, the minority of the Senate is preventing that body from offering its advice and consent.
Richard, listen, I want to come back to you on your further expectations, but I want to hear from Rabbi David Saperstein. Rabbi Saperstein, Richard Lesner says this is just full-blooded American politics, just the evangelical right participating as the left has for many years. What's the problem?
Well, on one level, he's absolutely right, and I've never heard anyone say that conservatives don't have a right to participate in the political process in America. It is what they are saying. In other words, you have a right to say whatever you want, and the Family Research Council has a right to hold the kind of event. I would defend that constitutional right. Mm. It doesn't make what you say right. And when the central thesis of this is to suggest that if you're in favor of preserving the 200-year-old tradition of the filibuster, that somehow you're against people of faith. If you oppose a handful, 10 out of the 215 justices, that judicial nominees the president has put forward because they are too extreme, that you're somehow discriminating against people of faith, or filibustering against people of faith. It is manipulating religion for political purposes, suggesting that those who are the Democrats and liberal Republicans who feel differently about the filibuster are not people of faith or are not friendly towards people of faith.
Gentlemen, if you'll let me just for a moment, I want to bring into our conversation while we have her, Governor Christine Todd Whitman. She's joining us from New Jersey. She's the first woman elected governor of New Jersey. She served in the Bush cabinet as EPA administrator. Her latest book, It's My Party Too, The Battle for the Heart of the GOP and the Future of America. Christy Todd Whitman, welcome back to One Point. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you.
You have written and said on this show that you're concerned about some of the interaction between religion and politics in the GOP these days. What do you think about what's transpired over the weekend in Louisville?
Well, again, I think what I'm hearing, and I've only picked up the last bit of this conversation, that you have merit on both sides. I believe that every nominee has a right to be voted, up or down, in a timely manner. That it is an abuse of the filibuster to try to keep people from having their opinions heard and giving these candidates the ability to be decided and put their lives are on hold. Their lives are, it's very difficult once you're an announced nominee for something to function at all until your nomination has been dealt with. On the other hand,
in other words, just to be clear, you're saying go with what Senator Frist called the nuclear option, and others, of course, change the rules.
Politically, it's bad for the party, mm-hmm. but I understand why they're doing it. And of course, we used some of these tactics back during the Clinton years to mm-hmm. hold up some of those nominations, and we've got to understand that, and that's fine mm-hmm. because I do believe the nominees deserve an up or down vote. But I don't believe that you can say that people who might object to various candidates on individual issues are somehow declaring a war on religion. That's just unfair, and that's not the way the process works. We have always respected the right of people to disagree and to vote their conscience. Elected officials are elected to represent the people, not just the parties, and it's never been a lost step.
President Bush won re-election last fall. He did it with a lot of support from conservative evangelicals. Is this still a winning strategy for the Republican Party to partner up tight here?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of things that would lead you to question that. First of all, as you and I have talked about before, it was the smallest plurality of any incumbent president ever returned to office. And so while it was an important victory and it was one that had coattails, which we haven't seen before, it was not a radical mandate. And all the polls that have been done afterwards would indicate that the evangelical percentage of the vote was the same in 2004 as has been in 2000. But let's look at what just happened recently in the Terry Schiavo case, which was a real tragedy for everybody involved. Mm. And yet you had the Republican leadership saying, we are going to impose the federal government here. We are going to try to override the judicial decisions. We're going to get them to look at it again. And then when they looked at it again and still didn't find for the parents, we had leaders in our party saying, they're all wrong, they're bad, and they're declaring war on religion. And you did a poll of the public, and whether you, depending on which poll you look at, 71 to 81% of the American public said they disagreed with what Congress did. So that's not a majority of the people, even though I think a majority of those people were probably Bush supporters at one point or another.
I know I've just got you for another second. Christy Todd Whitman, given the whole political landscape, looking at this in very real political terms, can any Republican, Bill Frist, Rick Santorum, Brownback, anybody, can they win the Republican nomination and the White House in 2008 without the full enthusiastic support of the evangelical right?
They need the evangelicals and they need the moderates too. And if you're looking for, as Karl Rove did in a very successful strategy to reelect the president, the 4 million evangelicals who hadn't gone to the polls, that's fine, and that worked, and it gave the president a small plurality, but it gave him a plurality, which is what he wanted. However, in 2008, we will not have an incumbent running. We will, God willing, not have a war, and we're going to have a very different set of circumstances here, and I don't believe that that is going to be enough if we continue to go on a path that narrows our base and tells people that somehow if you disagree in any way, shape, or form at all, that you are anti-Christian, anti-God, and anti-Republican.
Christy Todd Whitman, former governor of New Jersey, head of the EPA, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Christy Todd Whitman's latest book is It's My Party, Too. Jack Beatty, there's a range, and we want to hear much more from Rabbi Saperstein and Richard Lesner, but you see the range right there from Richard Lesner saying, hey, we've got a right to speak too. David Saperstein and Christy Todd Whitman from different angles saying, yes, but you can't go at people's attitude toward faith. You can't attack them for being anti-faith.
Yeah, that's a kind of attack we haven't had much of in American politics. It's a charge that people are uncomfortable with. It goes to issues of authenticity and belief, and it does seem to involve religion in an almost pettily tactical issue, namely the filibuster. I can't persuade myself that God is at all interested in whether the filibuster stands or falls. And to involve him or her in this kind of debate just seems sort of unseemly. I'm not a religious person, but it seems sort of blasphemous.
Peter Walston, you've been listening here as well. What's your sense? Is this a winning path for the GOP? You feel the tension between Christy Todd Whitman, who's on one end, and Richard Lesner on another, kind of. There's a lot of in common, too. Could the GOP hold together with this tension?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on who the candidate will be and who the candidates are. George W. Bush was somebody who managed to pull everyone together and put together a winning coalition. Many people think on the force of his personality. He was simply well liked. He himself is a deeply religious Christian, and he also built good relations with the rest of the party base. And it really depends on who that person is. But of course, what Karl Rove and other Republicans want to do is they want to build this durable, long lasting majority, and that tension is going to have to somehow be resolved. But that's what's so interesting about Senator Frist's situation now. He is in many ways testing the waters of the post George W. Bush Republican majority. And what happens to Bill Frist over the next few months in terms of whether the Senate gets shut down, who gets blamed for the Senate if it's shut down?
This is if the Democrats follow through on a threat to do that, if the filibuster is taken away as an option on nominations.
Exactly. How that plays out over the next few months could really be the first indication of how a post George W. Bush Republican majority functions and how it balances these competing interests.
Tricky waters right here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Richard Lesner, there's a challenge from Christy Todd Whitman saying we can't win again, Republicans, if we don't have evangelicals and moderates working together. Do you see that splitting apart with comments like Lindsey Graham's, with labeling John McCain, Richard Lugar, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, squishy Republicans? Is a wedge coming here inside the party?
The Republican Party is a party of a rather broad ideological spectrum. This is not true of Democrats. The ideological spectrum is much narrower among Democrats. They're almost all hard left.
But last night in Louisville, they're going at each other. They've got the pictures up and throwing tomatoes.
There are very few conservative Democrats left in the party. But on the Republican side, you do have still a rather broad party ideologically. You have everything from the Lincoln Chafees and the Olympia Snows from the Northeast.
Right.
The very conservative Republicans. So there's a fairly broad spectrum, and it's still a fairly big tent. This presents challenges, of course, to Majority Leader Frist as he tries to hold his conference together to accomplish a number of things, not just the confirmation of judges, but the confirmation of John Bolton, passing Social Security reform, and a number of things. And this is the nature of a majority party. Look, it's true in politics that the most important argument that is taking place takes place among the governing party. And that's what we see today. The important policy debates are taking place among Republicans. They're not taking place between Republicans and Democrats. The Democrats, frankly, don't have any policies. They have no initiative, nothing to offer. They're simply a roadblock party now, standing in the way of the Republican agenda. So the Republicans are arguing among themselves over such things as judicial nominations, Social Security reform, border security, the whole range of public policy issues. That's where the important debates are taking place. And I think that's just the nature of being a majority governing party. The Republicans are going to have to sort their way through that. It's kind of a new phenomenon for them, and they got to figure out how to be the governing party.
David Saperstein, it sounds like you're going to be rather uncomfortable on the sidelines as that internal debate takes place. Do you hear advocates inside the Republican Party for your point of view concerned about attacks on the basis of faith?
Well, on the issue of the filibuster, it is precisely moderate liberal Republicans who are joining with Democrats to say, don't abandon this 200-year institution. What was troubling about last night is not that the Family Research Council doesn't have a right to engage in religiously divisive messages. What was really troubling is that the Senate Majority Leader, who has a responsibility to disavow such language, to delegitimize such language, not only didn't do that, but participated in the event, thereby giving his stamp of approval for this kind of religiously divisive language that Governor Whitman and Jack Beatty were talking about earlier. That is alarming, and that is new. But it's that bipartisan coalition of decency that in the 20th century transformed America for the better, and I think will lead the country in a more moderate view, in a more moderate direction.
Peter Walston, we've just got you for another minute here. Is your sense that we're into new territory with Bill Frist's video link appearance in the mega church last night? Is this different from George Bush's kind of approach, you know, once removed, sending Karl Rove, or using iconic language rather than necessarily showing up himself? Are we in new turf here?
In one sense, we're in new turf in terms of how evangelicals react to a possible leader of the Republican Party that isn't George W. Bush. But, you know, President Bush did campaign to evangelicals quite directly, especially in the last campaign, and many Republicans have. And certainly campaigning in churches, you know, John Kerry campaigned in a lot of churches, as did Bill Clinton and other Democratic candidates for years. So campaigning and doing politics in churches is nothing new. What is new is perhaps the what we have as a serious debate and difference of difference of ideologies and philosophies between people of strong faith and people who might be who might vote based less on their faith and more on other issues, if that makes sense.
Yes, I think it does. Peter Walston, I know we have to let you go, but thank you very much for being with us tonight. Peter Walston is White House correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. We're joined as well by Richard Lesner, executive director of the American Conservative Union, and Rabbi David Saperstein, director of the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism. Jack Beatty's with us. You can join us as well, and I promise I'll get to you after the break. Is this still a winning strategy for the GOP you saw on display in Louisville, Kentucky last night? Or is it a bridge too far? Will it boomerang? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about God, politics, and the GOP, about Justice Sunday, about Bill Frist's gamble, and the church-state line in American democracy. You can join the conversation tonight. Where is the line between pushing for principles of faith and sinning against America's tradition of pluralism? Are we near it here or not? Republicans, how is all this sitting with you? Are you part of the conservative religious juggernaut or taken aback by it? And how does the country acknowledge a new era of faith without being divided on old religious lines? Can we emerge from this without branding some Americans angels and some devils? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight by Richard Lesner, by Rabbi David Saperstein. Jack Beatty's with us. And right now, senior political analyst for CNN, Bill Schneider, joins us. Bill, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Bill, what's your interpretation about of how all this is going to sort out for the Republicans? They've got some dissension within their own ranks now. James Dobson singling out Republicans last night, prominent ones, as squishy Republicans. Do we have a wedge within the party that's damaging, or is this just, as Richard Lesner's been said tonight, this is a ruling majority party going through a typical kind of internal debate, they'll be fine?
Well, I think that is certainly true. The Democrats certainly had their debates. Remember the great split among Democrats over civil rights when they were the majority party? The Republicans are likely to have the same split over religion. And I think this is caused by a classic case of overreaching. And the problem can be summarized in two words, Terry Schiavo. I think that alarmed a lot of voters who saw the Republican Congress suddenly reaching into people's private lives, getting involved in something that most people do not believe any politician should be involved in, a very private and personal decision. And the spectacle of the Republican Congress being called back to Washington, and then after they failed to get the judges to reverse their decision, essentially attacking the judiciary and seeking vengeance on the judiciary, that was a very unfortunate sight for many Americans who got very upset about it. And I think that has shifted the tide in the Democrats' favor in this entire battle.
But Richard Lesner here tonight, James Dobson in other venues is saying, look, we helped in a very substantial way get the president elected. We didn't do it for fun. We did it because we want a change in this country, and we want it. We're not kidding about it. This is democracy. We want to have it.
That's true. And they did, and they're demanding it, and they have a claim. There's no question about it. The problem is it's a very costly claim. Remember, Southern white racists used to have a similar claim on the Democrats. You couldn't get elected a Democrat without the South, and they pressed that claim for almost 100 years. But in the end, the Democrats had to make a decision. The Republicans may have to make a very similar decision.
But the evangelicals at this point seem to have a lot more momentum than the small number of Republicans who are voicing concern from another angle. Is this the track they're going to stay on right through the 2008 campaign?
They've been on this track since 1973, and that year was the year of the Roe versus Wade decision. Religious right and conservative Republicans have been furious at the judiciary, which they regard as aggressive and overreaching. They've been angry for over 30 years. Abortion rights, gay rights, school prayer, evolution. There's a long list of issues on which they have grievances with the judiciary, and they just waited for this moment. This is the moment when they've come to power. But if they press these claims, my feeling is it is going to split the Republican Party between the religious and the libertarian wings, and it's going to give Democrats an opening. This does happen with majority parties all the time. They win with the support of a constituency, but when they press those claims, they suddenly fall apart.
Bill Schneider, senior political analyst with CNN, and I know we have to let you go. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. Great to have
you.
My
pleasure.
Richard Lesner, I hear you there. Do you see, I'm sure you don't want to, but do you see a potential poison pill in the same fervor that you and others feel to get your agenda implemented for the GOP?
Well, the left can just continue to wish for this, and I think it's interesting that, with all due respect to someone like Christy Todd Whitman, you know, all the left, the advice from the left about the well-being of the Republican Party is greatly appreciated. But you know, but you got to wonder why the Republican Party continues to win elections, grow its majorities in both houses, and now is elected and reelected a president.
Bill Schneider says overreach. Does that idea concern you?
Well, he was right about one thing. There, conservatives have been concerned about the growing hubris and arrogance and overreach of the courts for a long time. And if it took this weekend to finally sort of bring this issue to the fore, that's a good thing. But this is not a new issue on the right. Conservatives have long been concerned that we have an out-of-control judiciary over which there is no check and balance as there is over the legislative and executive in our system. And it's about time that we cease having a judiciary that's determined to impose its own personal political agenda on the law and on the country against the will of the majority of the American people.
Do you fear that moderate Republicans, Christy Todd Whitman, others, libertarians will split away and end up splitting the Republican Party, take away the very majority that you have helped win?
Well, moderate Republicans were, you know, languished in the minority for decades. It's when the conservative movement arose, took control of the party, and began asserting to the country a decidedly conservative message that Republicans began winning. It started with Ronald Reagan in 1980, and it's continued. I mean, I know that the left would like Republicans to go back to being good old go-along-to-get-along moderates and not be conservative, because that would put them back in the minority.
And you're
saying, I don't think that's likely to happen. The Republican Party is now a conservative party. Conservatism is the dominant political ideology of the country. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
So no worries. I want to get our callers in here. They've been waiting so patiently. Perry is calling from Rockingham, North Carolina. Hi, Perry. You're on the air.
How are you?
Very well, thanks. What's on your mind, Perry?
Well, first of all, I'm a conservative Christian Democrat.
Okay.
I am a three-time-a-week churchgoer. And what really concerns me, and I'd like to answer his question about how the conservative Republicans keep getting elected, is because the people in my church know only one or two issues. They are basically illiterate when it comes to politics. What really concerns me is that 51% vote to Senator Bill Fritz is like a mandate for everybody. If you take away the filibuster, you've taken away one tool, but there are several other tools that were used by the Republicans for the Democrats in control to keep from stacking the Supreme Court and the courts of appeals with people that are favorable to their ideology.
So you don't like it, Perry, but I hear you saying even in your own church, you're in a minority.
In my own church, I'm in a minority because they only understand abortion and gay marriage. If you talk to them about lead and lead poisoning, if you talk to them about the environment, if you talk to them about $61 billion in profit that ExxonMobil rolled up in the first quarter of this year, which is not tied to the price of oil. It's tied strictly to what the gas station charges for gas.
But those are their priorities, those two you mentioned, and maybe you're confirming that it's a winning strategy that the evangelical right has here.
It is a winning strategy we combined with the rest of the electorate being illiterate. When I talk in my church, everybody respects me and they listen, but mine is only one small church. The problem is that the church has been converted to a Republican rubber stamp.
And it sounds like you're kind of a lonely soul there, but we appreciate your call, Perry. Karen's calling from Devlin, Wisconsin. Hi, Karen, you're on the air.
Hi, I just have what kind of to say about the last caller now, because I was a moderate Democrat.
Okay.
And I voted for Bill Clinton in the first election, and I have turned conservative because of the way our country has gone. And I'm now a mother of four, and I can tell you that I am not an illiterate. I have a political science degree, but I'm a stay-at-home mom, and the place that this country has gone to is just ridiculous. And what Bill Frist did and the evangelists did is right. We're sick of our country being taken to the left and us having no rights. I look at my children going through the public schools. We have no right to even show our face anywhere, but yeah, we have to see Muslims do it, and we see...
What do you mean, no right to show your face in public school?
Christmas is taken away. And
your religious face, I see.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so we're sick and tired of us being stamped on, too. our country is founded so everyone has a right. And I will not ever judge anyone for being gay or for having an abortion. But is the right to life right or wrong? That is a moral issue that the whole country should decide, because what happened to Terry Schiavo, Mr. Schneider from CNN, it was a policy that is ridiculous that half the country didn't even know about. And if you really studied it, you find out what was going on in that case and that she did have a right to live. She wasn't on a ventilator or anything, and that's what half the country didn't know.
Karen, we've got it. It sounds like you were right there with Bill Frist in spirit in Louisville last night. And thank you for your call. Rabbi Saperstein, this is articulated by Karen, what we've heard from Richard Lesner and others around the country. Conservative Christians saying they feel oppressed and kept from fully expressing themselves in the public arena in terms of their faith, and they're saying we're tired of that.
Well, when you listen to music and the Christian music stations, and you look at the televangelists on television, and you hear the political debates as we've been hearing them, it's really hard to understand the notion that somehow they're being shut up and shut out of American life. The problem is that they've been moving, not that Ronald Reagan was conservative, it's that they've been moving so much further to the right as time goes on. They're concerned about this liberal activist judiciary. Who are those liberal activist judiciaries? Over 60% of judges appointed by Ronald Reagan, George Bush, and George Bush. Those are the liberal activists they're against, the people appointed by those conservative presidents. But that's no longer good enough for them. The chief target on the Supreme Court is no longer the liberals. It's a moderate conservative, Anthony Kennedy. And the polls show that by 57-32, in a poll out today, ABC, the American people are not with Senator Frist on the filibusters or the people last night. They weren't with them on Terry Schiavo. More and more, this extremism is alienating middle America, and it's going to take a toll, and it should take a toll, because we need to find common ground in the middle. And this kind of extreme view really divides America rather than brings it together.
Paz is calling from Abington, Massachusetts. Hi, Paz. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I wanted to say something about Perry's comment, the caller before the previous. I think it was very enlightening. And now to what I was calling for is
yes.
I just wanted to make a distinction between what I see, something that I see as very important and concerning, maybe even scary, between the focus that the right-wing conservatives' assertion is giving to what they're calling the left infringing on their religious rights or freedoms. What I actually see is the opposite, is that the religious right is trying to... There are many different religions in this country, and that
includes people
who want to practice no religion. That's also a right.
Mm-hmm.
And by trying to... They're trying to turn their religious views into our laws. And by doing so, you know, whether it be gay marriage or whatever else, I think gay marriage is a good example of it, because that is someone's private life. If two people want to get married and they're not opposite sex, you know, that's their own private life. And the laws that are being trying to change the Constitution and trying to implement laws against that is just simply taking away those people's rights. I don't see how it's doing anything for the rights of the religious right, other than that they could say that doesn't exist.
It sounds like you see those as bedrock rights. I'm fairly sure that Richard Lesner will not. Pause. Thanks for your call, Richard Lesner. What about this? In a way, this is the charge that. That Jim Wallace made, saying that this is the creation of a Republican theocracy, an imposition of a fundamentalist Christian views through the government kind of theocracy on the country. How do you respond to that charge?
Well, it's complete humbuggery is what it is. I mean, it's just utter nonsense to suggest that those who believe that marriage should be preserved as we have known it for 4,000 years of Judeo-Christian history, as the union of one man and one woman, that those who want to preserve that are, quote, imposing their beliefs on others. And it's just complete nonsense. And anywhere you've submitted this question to the people, overwhelmingly, even in some of the most liberal states, the bluest states of America, the people uniformly render a verdict in favor of preserving marriage. So this is how topsy-turvy our debate has become. If you oppose same-sex marriage, which has only been imposed on our country by courts, if you oppose that, you are somehow guilty of imposing your theocratic views on society. When what's happening is really quite the opposite. We have a radical avant-garde that's determined to impose its notions about sexual relationships on a larger society. 11 states in this last election passed constitutional amendments to preserve marriage. It's going to pass in two more states this year.
And what about abortion? It's very often found to be supported by majorities in polls, and yet I'm sure you're against it. What about on that front?
Well, the abortion issue is a complex one, and you can't reduce it to a simple question, are you pro-life or pro-choice? It's a complex moral issue. When you break it down and you ask questions in a more sophisticated way about parental consent, parental notification, do you think that abortion should be used as an alternative means of contraception? Do you think that abortion should be used on post-viable babies, which it is done 50,000 times a year in this country? Do you think a means of abortion such as live birth abortion, where a baby's aborted?
Right, so there's a lot of ways to frame it that make it sound pretty tough to take.
But still,
overall, we see what the poll numbers are. Jack Beattie, I want to get your voice in here, if I may. Here's the big view. People comfortable with the status quo saying, this is America. Richard Lessner saying, no, that's a kind of avant-garde which has pulled the country into a secular foreign country. We're just trying to line things up with tradition and with majority view.
Yes, but in our current system, that requires overturning Supreme Court decisions with which they disagree. You know, because these are fundamental values, and we heard this from our callers, people who feel very strongly with strong convictions here, that's why we have a constitution that leaves these things out, that talks about instead equal protection of the laws, which was the 14th Amendment standard Justice Kennedy invoked in his decision striking down the Texas sodomy law. It talks about, you know, the separation of church and state. It deals with law and the Constitution and precedent. And in that way, it filibrates and it takes the edge off and moderates, I hope, some of these value debates which can't be settled. That's why we have a legal framework. And when people talk about let's end judicial review, there's been calling about that, they're playing with fire. That's not the founding fathers' scheme. They recognized people had passions, and they set up a constitutional scheme to protect us from that.
Rabbi David Saperstein, we have only a minute left. Your hopes and your fears as you look out on this landscape tonight.
I hope we start by preserving the filibuster, which of the 205 judges had their vote mostly overwhelming approved. Only 10 extremists, the lowest margin of almost any president recently. The reason the filibuster was enacted was to prevent one party from so dominating the political scene they could ram through whatever they wanted, no matter how extreme. The filibuster requires compromise, requires searching for the common ground. And I hope President Bush will come back with conservative justices who are not as extreme that can get the same support as the other 205 did. We need that common ground, and we need to have our political leaders eschew the kind of divisive extremism that threatens to tear America apart.
Well, and here comes 2008 with all of the dynamic that will bring into play. Rabbi David Saperstein, Director of the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism, thank you very much for joining us tonight. And Richard Lessner, Executive Director of the American Conservative Union. Thank you very much, Mr. Lessner, for joining us this evening.
My pleasure.
Jack Beattie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.